Hello, and welcome to The Sparkle Hour, a fun and feisty podcast for empowered women and woke menfolk.
Join us as we pull back the veil to reveal how we are taking control of our life stories and creating a movement of positive change.
I'm Michelle Lewis.
And I'm Nicole Lewis-Kieber.
And if you're ready to feel, laugh, and heal, this podcast is for you.
Hey there.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Michelle. I'm doing very well today.
Oh my gosh. I love it when we have special guests on. I get so excited.
I do too. I love our guests. I love having really good conversations. And oh my gosh, I really love watching you shine as someone who is such a great interviewer. It just makes me so proud.
I'll stop it. You go on.
Right. We have an amazing guest on today, and I'm going to read you a little bit of her bio. We also know Carolyn outside of the Sparkle Hour, and we think that she's an amazing human being. So let me just get the details out of the way, and we'll get started. So I'm going to read a little bit more about Dr. Carolyn Curry Avery. She's the creator of Pestology, the cutting-edge field that focuses on the synergy between pastoring and psychology. Love. In her work, both as an ordained minister and as a licensed psychologist, Dr. Curry Avery observed that although religion is a healing balm for some, it is an instrument of wounding for others. Dr. Curry Avery holds a PhD from Hofstra University and a Master's of Divinity from Yale. She's a pastologist, speaker, and facilitator of advanced therapy and workshops. And Dr. Curry Avery is the author of Sacred Intelligence, The Essence of Sacred, Selfish, and Shared Relationships. She's also the host of the public access show Sacred Intelligence TV. Welcome to the show.
Yes!
Thank you guys for having me.
Oh my gosh, we're so excited.
We are so excited. So,
can't you tell by the big smile on my face? We could see each other, but you know,
you're glowing. We're all glowing. I just love you. When I first met you and I heard your merged message, it just spoke to my soul, and it spoke to my professional, you know, that academic heart too. And I love what you're doing. So let's just kind of dive right in. So Pastology, how did you become interested in both psychology and being a pastor? Kind of take us on that journey.
So it's really interesting because I have always been the type to ask a million questions. I mean, when I was little, I would just ask people all their business, like older people. And I can remember my brother saying, can you just stop asking so many questions? And I would say, well, if they tell me the answers, I'm just going to keep asking. So I would ask personal questions. I would ask questions about the Bible, you know, and my parents were really, really open. We, even though I grew up in a family that was very steeped in church and church traditions and faith, we could ask anything we wanted. And my parents never stopped me. They never, if I thought something was crazy, they never said anything about it or whatever. And so I think just having grown up in a family like that, that encouraged me to ask questions, it really was just a natural part of who I am. So when I got older and I majored in psychology, I honestly thought I was done. I thought I was done with school. I knew I loved the Bible. I knew I loved God and all of that. But who thinks about growing up to become a minister? Like, I wasn't thinking that. And so when I was called to go back to ministry, I kind of fought it tooth and nail for a while. I sobbed once I realized I was getting ready to do this thing. And long story short, I realized after becoming a psychologist that I was also called to go back to divinity school. And I still fought it. I said, I'm never going to work in a church because church people are crazy. And I fought that for a long time. I said, I'm going to do a women's ministry. And then when I graduated, I ended up pastoring a church. And so I realized that there was a need to merge my love for psychology and my love for theology in a way that could serve other people and help deal with some challenges that are out there.
Oh, that's so fascinating. I love this. I actually wanted to touch in that just a little bit more. First of all, I just want to send like virtual energetic hugs to both your parents for being so open and so welcoming of you being able to ask questions, any mm-hmm. questions without being shut down. Like people don't recognize how huge that is. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you mm-hmm. do recognize how huge that is.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the calling towards ministry. And mm-hmm. if I can, what was that like for you as a woman and as a woman of color?
Mm.
Because that's...
Well, we have much time, do we have?
we got a hot minute here. Let's talk about it.
So let's talk about it. So there are a couple of things. So I grew up in a Presbyterian tradition. And in a Presbyterian tradition, we are a bit more open about women becoming pastors. And so by the time I came along, it was fully accepted that women could be pastors. I think it might have taken my dad a little bit of an adjustment because I had a sister who went before I did, and I think he had a little bit of concern about it. But actually, by the time I came along, I mean, she only went a couple of years before I did. My father was so absolutely wonderful. I cannot say enough about him. I mean, he was so wonderful that all the way through my schooling, I would call my dad to ask him questions about, you know, in the Presbyterian church, we have this book of order that we go by. He would guide me through it. If I had a sermon to do, I would ask him. And then actually my dad did this most amazing thing. He asked me to do his eulogy. So I was floored by that, but I believe it was his way of authenticating me as well as a pastor. I'm the youngest of 10, by the way. So it kind of, authenticated me within the family as a pastor, but it also just said, hey, I believe in you and what you do. So when I was called to ministry, I would get questions sometimes, you know, you have to go before this committee, you know, because you have all these tests you have to pass. It's a huge process. And, you know, often people would say, oh, well, what does your husband think? I'd say to myself, would you ask my husband, what does your wife think?
Thank you.
You know, but so that it was a process. And I will tell you, as a female clergy, is very, very different than if you're a male clergy, because I think that people sort of treat you differently. There were times when people would say, oh, I loved your speech. You know, after a sermon on Sunday, it's not a speech. It's a sermon. I'm giving a message and moving you, hopefully, in the same way that a male pastor would do. I think that there were times that, you know, as a clergy, on Saturday nights are really precious for clergy because you're trying to get your head around what you're doing the next day. It's a very humbling experience. I still had to take care of the kids. I still had to do whatever I needed to do as a mom. They didn't change. If I were a male clergy, let's say it were my husband, I'd take the kids and say, go somewhere and be quiet because your dad is, you know, studying for tomorrow. But that wasn't what my experience was like. But I think overall, it has been a good experience. Now, the second thing that you asked me in terms of being a clergy of color, well, that's a little bit of a different story. So I recently just finished pastoring a church where it's a predominantly white church. And I think they had very few female pastors to begin with, because the pastor before me had been there 19 years.
Okay.
So here I come with my of color enthusiasm. I'm very Presbyterian, but I'm an exuberant person. Mm-hmm. I don't shout. I don't scream. I don't do any of that, but I'm not like this when I speak. I speak with energy. So I would say amen sometimes. They were like, oh my God, like, what is she telling us to say? Some people were okay with it, but other people were like, what is this woman talking about? And so, you know, there's a little bit of that, you know, wanting to make sure that I'm being who I am authentically, mm-hmm. but also recognizing where people are. So, and I think that sometimes people responded to me without knowing that they were responding to me because I am a Black woman. Mm-hmm. They would think, oh, this is what we would say to anybody. Would you really? Would you really walk out of a meeting, you know, if I were a male leading you right now, if I were a white woman leading you right now, would you get up and walk out of a meeting? Not so sure.
Right.
I think there would be. So I think that there were things that happened that people didn't recognize that they were treating me in that way because I'm a woman and because I'm a Black woman, because there's implicit bias, right? Mm-hmm,
right.
But because I love what I do and I do love God, I keep moving with the course of what I have to do. And then I go and talk to other people like, can you believe this is what happened? but I stay on course. So, but thank you for asking that. It's a very good question.
Thank you. I also wanted to know a little bit more about, well, your whole premise really is about the wounding of religion and how religion can wound people and how we can then move from that wounding to a place of healing. Yes. And I was wondering if you could talk just a little bit more about that.
I think the most beautiful thing, if I go back to what my parents taught me with being able to ask questions, is that it is about my relationship with God, who I call the sacred, because the sacred can be defined in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. And so my parents taught me it's about that relationship. What religion does is says it's about following these specific rules. And so if you don't follow these rules, and I'm not saying that there aren't some things that we should, some guidelines for us, but I believe that if I stray outside of something that some doctrine that you've set over here for me, I'm not going to go to hell just because you said I'm going to go to hell, or God isn't going to stop loving me because you said God is going to stop loving me. And so what I find with the wounds of religion is that people often are hurt because they're being told that God doesn't love them because of who they are, mm-hmm. who they were created to be. People will sometimes be told that if you don't tithe, you're going to go to hell. Or I have seen wounds where people have been told, you know, you don't need medication. Just pray. God is gonna heal you. You know, those are some of the common ones. But I've also seen people feel guilty about not working in church. Or I've seen people who've been sexually assaulted by leaders in the church. I've seen people who have just really been emotionally abused. And so my message to people is that don't turn away from God or the things that you love about your faith tradition because of what people do. And it takes people staying within those circles in order to change the system. And that's always a hard part. When I was in divinity school, I remember in the Presbyterian Church, there was a whole discussion about whether gays should be officers. Could they be elected as officers? And could they be elected to serve as ministers? And I would be so upset, you know, about this whole discussion that we had been having for years in the church, according to my father. Now, he was 86 years old, and he said, oh, just political. It's just political. That's all it is. So, you know, he was even open about that at 86, right? So I remember my polity teacher saying, but Terrilyn, you cannot change a system unless you are in a system.
Say it again for the people out back.
Yeah, you can't change a system unless you're in a system. And so what that did for me is that it calmed me down a bit, and it helped me to understand that if I want to do the work, and I didn't know then that I was going to do this wounded by religion, but it let me know that you have to be a part of the change. You have to stay in there to change it. And so by the time I was ordained, thankfully, you know, they were getting to a place where it was going to be okay for me to like marry someone who's gay and all of those things, because, you know, they ask you some very pointed questions when you're ordained. And mm-hmm. I'm the type of person that I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say something just to stay in the system. But thankfully now in the Presbyterian Church, you know, We've evolved a bit, and I can marry whoever I want to marry.
Yay.
Yeah.
That makes me so happy to hear that. I was curious about, well, first of all, let's just take a breath and let go. Because when my chest starts to get tied up, I feel that our listeners who aren't even acknowledging, they don't even know they're listening to this yet. I can already feel their confusion and their pain, I can feel their reaction to what we're talking about. So I just want anyone who's listening to take a breath and know you're okay. Mm-hmm. And this is, it's just a conversation, you know, and you can be in or out of it as much as works for you. But when I first met you, when you were telling me about this, you know, wounded by religion thing, this understanding that you came to, it made so much sense to me. And it was really a conversation that I really needed to have. And you probably don't even realize this, but you know, just to give a little bit of context, I mean, you and I have spoke, I grew up in a very traditional Southern Baptist family, and there was no room for differentiation. There was no room for questions, really. It was just, you know, put your head down, shut up. And when you're an inquisitive kid and you're hearing people talk about drinking Jesus's blood and he's nailed to the cross for you, when you're anyone, I think, but particularly a curious and sensitive child, that does something to you. And so for me, I was working through being compliant most of my life around church than to just cutting it all off, because I could not say yes to and participate in being a group of people who thought it was okay to tell other people that they were not okay as they were born. You know, that being born gay, well, you can't act out if you're gay. It just was all nonsense to me, and I just couldn't be a part of it anymore. So my only recourse at that point was to rebel. And so I lost my spiritual connection. I lost the belief that there was anything out there. I had to believe in nothing because that didn't work for me. And when I began to realize that I needed spirituality in my life and that I needed a connection, because we're all connected. You know, the connection between us, I believe, is spiritual. And so when I talked to you and, you know, it kind of confirmed that I need to make more space for this and that I can reclaim Sundays and that there is a sacred intelligence. And, you know, I just want to thank you for that, because I was wounded, you know, by those systems that I was caught in and just by the just blindness of most of it. So I would imagine, as you're talking to people, that you come up against some resistance around this topic, because it's a really hard one for us to, first of all, look at, feel through, and then deal with our complicitness in it, you know, because I've been in a position to be told to tell others that they're not okay and that they are going to not be with us in heaven if they don't do X, Y, Z, or we're going to withhold something from them if they don't become one of us. So that's a lot to throw at you, but what's your reaction to that?
Well, I have a lot. That's, you know, where do I start? So I just want to say it's really interesting that you use the example telling people to drink the body and blood of drink and eat the body and blood of Christ, because I actually had not even thought of that as wounding until November of 2017, when I was talking to someone about the work that I do. And he told me about multiple wounds, but he said, try being a six-year-old and being told you're eating the body and blood of Christ. Now, as a minister, I do communion all the time. And when I do communion in our church, we say that it represents the body and blood of Christ, that that when you do it, it's a symbol, and each time you do it, just to remember Christ. But to think about it from a six-year-old perspective, what might that sound like? So I think that that's why it's important to be in the conversation, so that we can start having those conversations to say, hey, you know, maybe you want to have the kids to be out of church, you know, during this part, right? And so I think conversations are valuable, but you have to be in a church that's willing to be open. I do want to say, I appreciate you telling people to stop and to breathe, but this conversation is one where people, particularly Christian folks, will slam the door to the conversation because they think that you're being a heretic. So last week, I actually had a community dialogue called Wounded by Religion, Healed by the Sacred. It was great. Absolutely great. I got a lot of good feedback from it. But yet there were people who were present in that room who became very upset because my interpretation of whether homosexuality is or is not a sin was different from theirs. Just the idea that I was having this conversation, there were ministers who said to other folks, do not go to this conversation. Shut it down before they even knew what the conversation was about. And if you listen to my message very closely, I don't tell anybody what to think or to believe about whatever their faith tradition is. But my message, and I don't even know if this is answering your question, because it was a lot that was put out there. My message is simply this: we are all divinely created and we are all loved unconditionally. And if you belong to a faith tradition that tells you anything other than that, that to me is wounding. And if you are not in a place where you can question it, that is wounding. I'm not saying that you go out here and you believe any and everything, because I do believe that the Bible is God's inspired word. That's my belief. That doesn't mean that everybody else has to believe that. But what I also believe, just like I accept that Bible as my belief, what I understand in there is that that basic premise always boils down to love.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so how do I judge anyone else? Why don't I just take care of what's going on with Terilyn, right? And you take care of what's going on with you. I'm not telling you how to believe, because I also want to respect people for having whatever beliefs they have. But I will not say to someone else, you're going to go to hell over here because of who you are, or you're going to go to hell because you behaved in such a way, whereas I don't take care of what I need to take care of over here for myself. And I don't act from a place of love, because what infuriates me really is when I see these people who tout that they just love, love, love God and love Jesus, but yet they can treat people like dirt, and they can believe in oppression, and they can believe in not feeding the homeless and doing all these other things. It's inconsistent and inconceivable to me that you really are going to go to heaven more than anybody else, but you're doing all this other stuff. So, yeah. Sorry, that's kind of ranting a little bit, probably.
But no, but very valuable information.
Very valuable. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, equality is powerful, and it's threatening to those who are already holding the power. Mm-hmm. So they don't want to give that up. You know, and that's not exclusive to any one major religion. That's that's just the way life works. You know, when you're holding all that power, you don't want to give that up. And it's threatening, and they want that conversation shut down. So,
well, and you raise a really good point, because I think that's why some people didn't want me to have this conversation, because they were so afraid that it was going to call them out in some way. And honestly, I'm not teaching anything other than what they ought to be teaching, which is you are a loved child of God. Mm-hmm. That's really what I'm teaching. But I just want to say, you know, you kind of talk about this, the female perspective. It also saddens me sometimes when I see other females and other women kind of holding people down as well, because we do it in subtle ways. When we tell ladies, well, you know, when you come to church, make sure that, you know, you zip up and you button up, because you don't want to, you know, you don't want to provoke the men. Well, they need to take responsibility for their own behavior.
Oh my God,
I'm not
amen.
Saying that we have to go and show everything, but I am saying that we at least ought to think about how we treat, you know, other women. Or like when there was an article I read recently where this man got a pastor got a standing ovation because he said there was a sexual incident that occurred 20 years ago. He dealt with it and he's recovered from it. And they got up and they gave him a standing ovation. Mm. Well, what about the poor woman that he sexually assaulted? Not a sexual incident. You know, there's so much wounding. I mean, too much for us to talk about in half an hour, but
But
the point is really for us to try to do what Nicole was saying earlier, is to find our centering, find our place with God, sacred spirit, whatever you want to call it. Because if we don't have that, it impacts our lives in other ways.
It absolutely does. Mm-hmm. When I was an atheist for however many years, I was lost.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in rebellion, you know, and so for me, I really agree. I agree with that, that it's part of who we are. It's needed. If we can't really, if we try and deny that part of ourselves because of something some person said it meant or didn't mean, we limit our capacity and we limit our own healing. And so I think it's so very important to kind of circle back around to the fact that we are divinely created, and we have a purpose for being here, and that if we don't know ourselves in that way, that we really limit what's possible, you know, for us. So
we limit our ability to, you mentioned sacred intelligence before. I define sacred intelligence as our ability to tap into our sacred source so that we can make intelligent choices, and it helps us to be the best at who we are. So whether it's a business or personal relationship or whatever it is we are seeking, we can tap into that sacred part, but we can't do it if we've been wounded and don't believe anymore.
So, yeah. So very true.
So real quick, and I know we have to let you go in just a few minutes, and I hate that. Maybe we can get you back here.
But, yes, I'd love it.
So we've talked a little bit about finding your way back if you've been the one who was wounded. But what if you are on the other end of that and you have the guilt and shame of being the wounder? Is there hope and is there a way?
Of course. I think the way is the same way for the person who's been wounded. And one of the things that I always say is go back to your sacred source, your centering. And the way that you do that real quick is that you try to find a trusted guide who can help you get back to that centering, because it always helps to have somebody you can bounce these things off of. I think that the second thing that you do is that you stay focused on what your goal is. And so if your goal is healing, that's what you're going to be moving towards. And you're going to focus on the healing that you need. Don't worry about what everybody else is doing in that moment. Focus on what's required for your healing. The third thing that I would say is, as you go through any phase of healing, stay in a place of gratitude. So try to look at the things that you can be grateful for during your healing process. Don't go back to what happened in the past or any of that, but stay focused on your gratitude. And then the fourth and final thing is that when you reach that place of centering, stay there for a moment, because that's where you hear from the sacred. And that's when the sacred will continually guide you through what your next steps should be.
Yes. Thank you so much. That's so incredibly helpful.
Oh, you're welcome.
Oh my gosh. I can't wait for our listeners to hear this.
I'm excited.
Okay, I have another bonus question, and then yes. Nicole, I know you have something too. You don't. You do.
No. I actually don't. I feel really good and complete about our conversation.
I'm so happy on my end of it.
So I'm giving you the floor.
You're so cute. All right. So what was it like to be on a TEDx stage?
Oh my goodness, I loved it. Loved it. It was thrilling. It was just super exciting to be on there with all these amazing folks who had all this wonderful stuff to say, and just great being looking out at that audience and seeing them affirming this topic. I mean, they were really, you know, so excited about this work. And I had people coming up after going, oh my gosh, thank you for sharing that mess. Even young people. I had an exchange student who was from China who came up to take a picture with me because she was so excited. So it was just thrilling. I absolutely loved it.
That is so very special.
Yeah.
Do you have anything coming up that you'd like to share with our listeners about?
Oh, I do. I have what I call an Empower Trip retreat that's coming up. And the theme of it is called It's Time, My Voice, My Vision, My Value, because I'm going to be talking with women about speaking up and being clear about what their vision is and speaking their value, whether it be in relationships, whether it be in work, whether they've had some wounding around religion, whatever the case. And it's a whole weekend retreat. It's April 6th, 7th, and 8th. If your listeners would like to, they can go to sacredintelligence.com for more information. We're in the process of getting it all up on our website. So I would love for them to come. And it's at a resort spa. So
where at?
It's at the Water's Edge Resort and Spa in Connecticut, in Westbrook, Connecticut. So it's a lot of fun. We do a lot of deep work, but last year we partied too on Saturday night. So, so we had like a karaoke night and we danced until about 10:30 at night, got up early Sunday morning and continued working. So I would love for your guests and for you all to come. It's lots of fun.
Well, we'll definitely include links to that in our show notes, as well as how people can get in touch with you. What is the very best way for people to get in touch with you if they want to know more about Sacred Intelligence?
So if they want to know more, they can email me personally at Terrellyn, T-E-R-R-L-Y-N, at sacredintelligence.com. And I will get back to them on ways that we could work together.
Wonderful. Oh my goodness. Thank you so, so much for being here.
Thank you, ladies, for having me. I so enjoyed it.
this has been very healing for me as well.
Oh, so. Thank you. I'm glad. I'm glad.
Yeah, beautiful. We will definitely have this. We'll have you on again. There's more to discuss.
So much more.
Thank you.
All right, y'all. Again, if you have any questions or comments, please reach out to us at our website, www.thesparklehour.com. Be sure to check our show notes for information on how to get a hold of Dr. Terlin and all of her good stuff that she's got going on. We'll be sure to include a link to her upcoming retreat. That's this April 2018. Mm-hmm. So you'll be able to get in on that while there's space still available for you. As always, join us on our Facebook page, The Sparkle Hour. Get involved in our private group, When in Doubt, Sparkle That Bleep Out. And we would love to add you there. And we're so grateful for all of you. We know that this is a difficult topic for so many of us. So know that you are loved. Know that we are here to support you. We're just all in this together, y'all. So yeah. Thank you for being part of this today.
Thanks. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Sparkle Hour. Today's episode was brought to you by Nicole Lewis Kieber Coaching
and The Blessings Butterfly. To learn more about the topics discussed today, please visit our website at www.thesparklehour.com. And remember, when in doubt,
sparkle that shit out.
Yes, please.